Hey, thanks for asking. I'm fine. How are you? Welcome back to the Roundtable. It is Wednesday, the 12th of February. I'd like to have you with us during our panel discussion this morning. We have an amazing group assembled around our semi-round table, and we have a lot to talk about today. Sort of two huge stories to talk about, one being the New Hampshire primary, two being Roger Stone. We will obviously tackle both of them, perhaps even at the same time. We welcome you to join in, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. I reminded you of this the other day. I will do it again. Please keep your letters short. We want to get to as many as possible. Also, a quick programming note, at 10:30 this morning, Alan will be talking to the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, who apparently, if he comes on Friday, will now be an official co-host of the program. So that's it's very nice. We're in good company.
And careful, Rosemary's looking for your seat.
Yeah, it's right, exactly. And we didn't even have to get elected. That'll be coming up at 10:30 this morning, and we look forward to that. So we have a lot to talk about. Let me introduce everybody. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative reporter. She is also a professor, adjunct professor at UAlbany. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Very good to have you. Speaking of UAlbany, we have the Dean of College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Robert Griffin. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Joe. Hey, Joe, could I just give a quick thank you to everybody involved in snow clearing? The folks who are dealing with the roads and the snow and weather that we've had lately have been tremendous. So I just want to say thank you to them and their families for everything they do.
And if your town may vary, we even thank them.
We thank the towns that didn't bother us.
Well, because have you been that? Like you're driving down and everything is clear as a bell and you think to yourself, this is great. And then you make that one turn down the road and you're like, oh boy, what happened to the plow here?
Right, right. Frequently I go from very early in the morning from Great Barrington on Route 41 and hit the West Stockbridge line. And sometimes one town is better than the other.
No, I will join you in saying I live in Washington County. Washington County does an amazing job. But when I cross the county line, you know you're in another county because it's just
It's hard work and they don't get a lot of recognition.
Absolutely.
And you are from the emergency, preparedness.
Services, yeah.
Yeah, emergency preparedness. And so it's quite correct for you to say that. Bob.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning,
how
Joe.
Are you?
Sorry to take you off.
Yes, no, that's fine. And somebody who could very well write a column with an opposite opinion is Times Union columnist Chris Churchill. Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, I'm good.
Great to have you here. Thank you very much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor and former New York State Senator Terry Gibson here as well. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. And Alan Shartok, how you doing there, buddy?
I'm recovering.
Yeah.
Chris, I must say, I want to tell you how much I admire your outfit today. You're wearing what looks like a new shirt. Is that right?
It is fairly new. Thank you for noticing, Alan.
Yeah, sure. I just want to tell you, we like it when you come in here.
He is a slave to fashion, Chris.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, all right. Good morning, everyone, and thank you. Let us get started, and we begin with the state of New Hampshire and the state of the world, I guess. So New Hampshire had a primary yesterday, and I think the predictions were that Bernie Sanders was going to win. He did. The predictions were that Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg would do well. They did. Pete Buttigieg did even better than many people had expected. I think there was a 7 or 8 point difference. When I went to bed last night, I think with 96%, he was about 1.4% between the two. So by all accounts, that's a really close race.
That's a story.
Meanwhile, we have, and I'm still getting my notes up, but we have Andrew Yang, Deval Patrick, and
Bennett.
Michael, yes?
Right.
No.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Michael Bennett, all dropping out of the race, which... Yang was interesting, Deval Patrick was interesting, and then I said, oh, Michael Bennett's still in the race? That was sort of my order of understanding of that last night.
And I said, who is Michael
Bennett? He was a great choreographer.
You guys aren't James Carville fans. He's been all over Michael Bennett from the get-go.
He's been all over cable television, too. I see him every night on the cable shows.
Well, he'll have more time.
Yes, he will. Now he can analyze the remaining characters.
So, but who do we still have? We still have Tulsi Gabbard.
Thank you. I love her. Yeah.
So she did. She did poorly yesterday, 3%, I think. And then, Joe Biden had, I believe, 8%, between 8 and 9%.
And Elizabeth.
And then Elizabeth Warren.
And Tom Steyer is in there
and
somewhere.
And Tom Steyer is in there as well. Yeah. Now, Tom Steyer has put a lot of faith into South Carolina. Joe Biden has put a lot of faith into South Carolina. Elizabeth Warren made it known, I think, we'll believe her words, that she doesn't plan on going anywhere, that she has an operation through Super Tuesday. So we assume that she will be in the race. And then you have Amy Klobuchar, who obviously is surging. Was it enough? I don't know. We have Pete Buttigieg, who, again, was the one, as far as delegates go, is even with Bernie now. So I don't know. What does the panel make of this, and where do we go from here? Because looming, like a big elephant in the room, is Mike Bloomberg. Alan, what do you make of it?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of Democrats are very frustrated with the field and feel that Bloomberg, would be the answer. However, you can see they're gearing up for Bloomberg. And as you know, Donald Trump believes in the big lie. You say it over and over and over and over again, and pretty soon somebody believes it. There is the whole stop and frisk thing, which is now being tied around his neck like, a tin can. And they've got to know how to answer that. They had a Bloomberg rep on NPR this morning. I didn't think he did a very good job of explaining it. I don't know what I would do if I were him at this stage.
I think last night was a really, really good night for Bernie Sanders. I mean, not only did he win his second straight popular vote total, but he vanquished, or the two people who were seen as his primary rivals going forward did really poorly. Right, I mean, Elizabeth Warren was seen as his progressive rival, and Joe Biden was seen as his kind of the guy who was going to compete with him for working class voters, and both of those candidates did really poorly. Mm-hmm. Buttigieg and Klobuchar did well, but there's not much evidence so far that they will be strong going forward. I mean, they don't do well with voters of color and with lower income voters. So even though some people would say that Bernie underperformed a little bit last night, what people thought he might do going in, I think overall it was a really, really good night.
So
for him.
Yeah.
And if the situation sets up that is Bernie versus Bloomberg, that's the perfect foil for Bernie.
That's what it's going to be.
I mean, he knew he was going to have somebody. It was going to get down to two people at some point. If it's Bloomberg, I think he's happy with that.
I mean, his messaging last night was very clear. We're running this campaign against millionaires, or against billionaires, and against candidates who take money from billionaires. So right there, you've got, you set it up.
Right.
Right.
I assume mostly alluding to Pete Buttigieg, of course. So,
and I don't know that I agree with you that Elizabeth Warren is going to be in this for the long haul either. I mean, if she doesn't do well in Nevada,
I don't mean the long haul, but I think,
or even through Super Tuesday.
Okay, yeah,
yeah. Because I can't imagine that she would want to have a really poor showing in Massachusetts, which is what would happen potentially if she stayed.
Well, when you get married to an idea that you can win, in some people's minds, that's very hard to give up.
The embarrassment of finishing fourth in your home state would be something I think she would want to avoid.
Although if you could grab a couple of delegates and you look at the potential for a brokered convention, which I know we always say this at this time of the cycle, but a brokered convention, you could become a real player with even a handful of delegates. So I don't disagree with you that she's not going to want to embarrass herself in Massachusetts, but at the same time, if she could have a little stronger showing in Massachusetts and grab some delegates, it keeps her as a player.
I mean, she's really got to do well in Nevada for this thing to go forward. I mean, and she could, because it's a caucus and unions play a very big role there. And if she gets a couple of big endorsements, she could do well and come back. But that's really
what Bob was just saying about at this point. These are the kind of things we talk about, broker conventions. But the other thing we talk about is the power of momentum. Certainly Bernie has momentum. who does not have momentum is Joe Biden. And going into South Carolina, I know that's his quote-unquote firewall, as he calls it. And he certainly made it clear last night in speaking to supporters in South Carolina, not in New Hampshire. He got on a plane and got the hell out of that state. Mm-hmm. So went right to South Carolina. But he made it clear he was looking for the black vote, he was looking for the Hispanic vote, and he was going to work very hard. Will he get it if, with the numbers that he has so far and the fact that he has been showing very poorly, not first, not second, not third, mm-hmm. not fourth, but fifth?
Yeah, he's completely anemic, Joe. And as someone who has been sort of a vocal supporter of Biden, I think he's on the ropes. And I don't think he not only has to win, he's got to win with some impressive numbers. Because he is, I think he's significantly damaged right now. And unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any new ideas or enthusiasm in the campaign. The campaign itself strikes me as really stale at a time where we should be revving the troops up and getting them all excited about fixing the problems that have been created in Washington. I don't hear any of that.
I'd like to ask Rosemary a question about your views, Rosemary, on the DNC and whether they could mess this whole thing up for Biden, who they clearly are for.
I think they've already messed it all up. I think their debate rules were stupid, and then they didn't change them for minority candidates but did for Bloomberg, which adds to Bloomberg's, as if he needed it, elite status. I actually agree with everything Chris said, and that is why I believe we're marching towards a Boris Johnson-Jeffrey Corbyn contest in November, and Trump is going to get four more years.
And Corbyn would be Bernie?
A radical, yes. He's extremely progressive, way out of sync with most of the voting public. He's going to – I never saw him. I don't get the argument at all that he can beat Trump. If he does, he's another Trump, although I will vote for him if he is the nominee, which 59% of his supporters don't. And I do really hate that. I think the Republican Party is shattered at this point, and the DNC ought to be playing a role saying, let's get together and talk about what we should be doing. I don't see Tom Perez doing that. He's been remarkably weak and ineffective.
You might be right about the Sanders-Corbyn analysis, but so far there's no data to suggest that's true. I mean, Bernie does better against Trump than all the other candidates, except sometimes Joe Biden. Bernie does best among independents. Bernie does best among young voters, voters under 40. I mean,
weren't we saying this 3 weeks ago about Biden? No, I just don't see it.
The counter to that is that he hasn't been through the rigors of a national campaign, and that
beginning to call him commie now.
But at this moment, he does the best with independents by far. What? So there's no real evidence that he would be a Corbyn type.
Well, Chris may be right in that when we look at this from the beginning, we see Trump won because he was an outsider. And there are those people who say Bernie would have won had he been. Of course, he was an outsider from the other side, and people were looking for that, not looking for an institutionalist.
So he cuts directly into Trump's blue collar base too.
So let me ask you about two factoids that we received from last night for what they're worth, in a couple of minutes before we go to the break. One was that in an exit poll that was taken, they said who is least likely to be able to unite the Democratic Party. And I think with 56%, people said Bernie Sanders was the least likely. Although people obviously liked him on other questions and other fronts. That being number one. Number two, second time in a row, and to Rosemary's point about the DNC and Perez, turnout was really lousy.
Mm-hmm. It was still better than it had been in the past. It just wasn't as good as we all hoped it would be. I think the exit poll in one state that isn't really representative of the entire country, I don't put a lot of weight into that. I think that Bernie Sanders is the clear front runner. You can't deny that. I think it's too soon to be able to look forward and say what's going to happen, because we haven't seen how Bernie performs as the clear front runner. He's never done that before. Remember last time around, it was him and Hillary Clinton pretty much even back and forth. He really does now own the race. It's his race to lose. And so we have to wait and see what he's able to do to unite voters that are maybe on the fence. And I think he could very much beat Trump, and I think he could unite the country if he does not mess up his messaging, which so far seems to be working. I also I know it's a real long shot, but I was really happy to see that the Klobuchar campaign last night made a decent showing. And I'm not going to count her completely out. I think the way she plays to a lot of moderate voters is going to be significant in some of these primaries that are coming up.
Yeah, and before we get 1,000 letters, too, we would be remiss if we didn't recognize the Buttigieg campaign. Mayor Pete coming in with such a strong showing. I mean, I'm actually very surprised at that, and I agree with you with the Klobuchar campaign running as well as it did. But it also shows you that Warren and Biden really are not keeping up with the at least the initial sprint out of the box. And everybody's saying it's a marathon, and I get it, but sometimes if you get too far behind at the beginning, it's impossible to catch
up. Biden's speech last night was weak. He doesn't really have anything to say that is particularly inspirational or motivational. There's nothing new there. He's lagging behind, and I almost feel like he would be doing himself a service to just at some point in the near future step out, because nobody wants to see this person who we really all do very much, adore and enjoy and embrace in many ways. I mean, we're grateful for his service. We don't want to see him be beaten like this. I don't personally want to see him be beaten like this. It's just not the way to go out.
Yeah, his speech last night was rambling a little bit. Disturbing might be too strong a word, but worrisome for sure. I mean, he just does not look like he's.
But
up
he seems
this.
Sedated.
Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
I wonder if somebody wants.
Was it Nancy?
It might
Pelosi
have been better if he
Trump
had been.
Yeah.
Bob, I wonder if you want to talk a little bit more about Buttigieg.
Can we hold that and come back and talk about Buttigieg? Sure. Excellent. Let's do that. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We have, you all right? Want a lozenge? I think Pop's going to hook you up. Is that Fisherman's Friend? What is that?
Fisherman's
Friend. Fisherman's Friend.
You have stock in that company? Yeah, you always have one.
It's part of being preparedness. Fisherman's Friend. Yeah. All right. We'll lozenge up, and we'll be back in just a few moments. We have Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Rosemary Armeo, panel at WAMC.org.
Something in the way the world has changed, broken apart and rearranged. And the river's rising, rain keeps pouring down.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Drew Emmett and Vince Herman of Leftover Salmon will be performing at the Egg. That's what music we just heard. Leftover Salmon.
How is that?
I don't know. You know, unless you microwave it, it's pretty good.
It's better cold.
Yeah. I think so.
But cold is not bad.
Leftover Salmon is we're playing music from them. Drew Emmett and Vince Herman will be at the Egg on Valentine's Day at 7:30, and you can find out more at theegg.org. Okay, let's go to letters. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. Alan.
Christine writes to us, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Everyone should listen to both Klobuchar and Warren's speeches. Let's have a Klobuchar-Warren ticket. Put the women in charge, Christine.
Both candidates were very complimentary of each other last night. But to the point of Elizabeth Warren, I did think, I know at least two of the cable networks covering did not go to her speech. They finally, I think, gave in to pressure and aired it later because people were yelling that they didn't go to it, Elizabeth Warren's speech. But, here is a candidate who is her neighboring state, and she spent a lot of time. And in the summer, she was 20 points ahead. And just what happened?
It wasn't too long ago on the show when we were just talking about her as the front runner with Biden. You know, that was obviously an incorrect punditry. But, I mean, she, at the time, in the polls, and she seemed to have all the momentum. She seemed to be doing really well. And there's just been this slide that is a little bit difficult to explain, I think.
One of the downsides of, peaking too soon. The risk you run at getting ahead too soon is that there's a longer time for you to slide down. So it's hard to stay out front that long.
But Rosemary, you think that a woman can win?
I do not think a woman can
Why
win.
Why do you think that? I just don't
Because
understand
it's never
that.
Happened, because the most qualified candidate ever was put down for reasons that I know you go on and on about them, but they continue to elude me. Anything you could say about Hillary, you can say about any of the candidates.
But what is this
now?
Argument about the most qualified? I mean, I think a lot of people would debate whether that was the most qualified candidate ever. I mean, is that really? I just don't.
Yeah, I think
the
women have to be far better than the men. You did. I mean, Yang is still in the race until now. Why? Because of money?
I just think a woman can win. I really do think a woman can
win. I agree with you.
I do too. I do 100%.
I agree with him. But
what was your? I'm sorry. What was your point about Yang being?
I mean, he stated he was not a candidate who had any of the appeal, much of the appeal of the women, and that he stayed in much longer.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Russian money.
All right.
I mean, and then look at so, Warren is ahead until she goes out and crowds begin to see an opinionated, strong, gesticulating, angry, if you will, woman, and the votes disappear.
On the other hand,
that's really ominous.
I would like to point out, to counter the argument of it's never happened before, is we never had a black president before. And, you know, everybody assumed a black guy couldn't win, but he did.
I do think there's something to Amy Klobuchar's argument that a female Pete Buttigieg couldn't get this far.
Yeah, that's a good point. She's made that repeatedly.
I would agree that the bar is higher, but I don't think there's anything to suggest that a woman can't win. I mean, Hillary came, as we've said
won
before,
the popular vote,
won
right.
the popular vote. And if she had made a few different strategic choices, she would have won. She won the popular votes. That, in a sense, proves that a woman can win.
These are lovely sentiments, and I wish they were true. But I really believe I will not see a woman president in my lifetime.
You said that 4 years ago, or 3 years ago.
No, I said that after Hillary lost.
Yeah, 3 years ago. Yeah.
But you know, we also can't ignore the credit that should be going to the ground game from the Sanders campaign and the Buttigieg campaign.
So, come on.
Yeah, but Warren didn't have the. It's obvious that her organization didn't bring it.
It kind of proves that the ground game isn't everything.
What does that mean? That she had it, but she didn't bring it. What exactly does that mean?
They didn't deliver.
Well, it just comes down to the campaign. It always comes down to the campaign.
We can bring the campaign to the town, but if they don't buy what you're selling,
right? You can knock on their door, but if they're not coming with you to the polls, it doesn't do any good.
And you don't think her gender has something to? I also think the AOC endorsement for Bernie was terrible for Warren. I think that was a really bad thing. I think Bernie has had. You're right. He's been campaigning since before the 2016 election, and that has not gone away.
But Elizabeth hasn't had a perfect campaign. I mean, she's made some mistakes, as they all have, but she's made some big ones. She started off with the whole Native American thing, which was, very controversial, and we finally moved past that. Yeah, but she came through it. I mean, she got through it, but, she went and sort of made a big thing about it. I think that was a mistake. And then she got into the whole back and forth on Medicare for All and her health care plan.
Buttigieg is gay and has the blacks in his town have been treated horribly. So if you want to talk about mistakes matching them,
they've all had mistakes.
Yet he's soared and she has not. The only difference is gender.
It's also money.
Anyway, on to the next letter.
Yeah, sorry, Alan.
No need for apologies. Election interference. I read about a GOP spokesman in Greenville, South Carolina, telling all Republican voters to vote for Sanders in South Carolina since they have open primaries. Disgusting. The theory is that he's easiest to beat. We shall see if they respond. And that's from Kevin. I mean, that's the argument,
happens,
right?
Yeah.
Be careful what you wish for, because Sanders could be the one who is the strongest candidate.
We just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we heard from Debbie in Lenox, who says, I listened to Amy Klobuchar's speech last night, and in capital letters, she made me feel hopeful, perhaps for the first time in this campaign. Hopeful about America, her story, and how she tells it are engaging, reassuring, energizing. Chris Matthews, MSNBC, said last night that Democrats want to vote with their hearts, will vote for the person who offers the bright vision along with plans to accomplish it. He pointed out that Bernie is mostly critical, not visionary. This changed the whole picture for me. Klobuchar or Bloomberg or both, from Debbie and Lennox.
I just want to say about Klobuchar to remember that she really drew attention to herself during the Brett Kavanaugh trials
when she
stood up to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was clearly being directly coached by Donald Trump on how to be a bully and push back.
Have you ever had blackouts?
And she stood up to him. So, I am curious about how she's going to progress, because I think she does have the ability to stand side by side with Donald Trump and push back on him.
And if she gets the vice presidency nomination, then how she'll do against Pence? Ha ha ha.
Yeah. I mean, the thing interesting about Klobuchar is that up until last Thursday or so, she was polling in the single digits in New Hampshire. She had a great debate performance on Friday. She made $3 million in a weekend and came out with almost 20% of the vote.
Yeah, it's an interesting profile of her in the Post where they're calling her full Amy, and that up to now she's tamped herself down. She was kind of tentative and almost out of desperation, because this is her last stop, she let it all out and was her full throat itself.
I think the big problem she has, though, is that Pete Buttigieg also did really well last night, and they're competing for the exact same vote.
They certainly are.
Okay, and here we go from Wendy. Brokered convention. Could you please explain a brokered convention? Under what circumstances this would take place? How will this take place?
If only we had a political scientist to ask that question.
And how exactly would it work? Well, we don't have brokered conventions in America anymore. And every single time we have a convention, somebody, whether it's somebody close to Mario Cuomo or Andrew Cuomo, says, we're waiting for a brokered convention and anything can happen. But it doesn't happen anymore. Yeah, that's not the way it works.
Yeah, somebody is going to go into that convention with the most votes.
Sure.
And that person, if they take it from that person, and if it's Bernie Sanders, they might be tempted to. That'll just destroy everything. Trump will win.
That's why I asked Rosemary that question before about how the DNC was doing, because they are in the position to make the same mistake here that they were against Bernie, and that's not an approach, Alan endorsement of Bernie, but that they did the last time out, and basically gave people the impression they were unfairly helping Hillary.
Yeah, I don't think the rank and file is going to stand for that, because their goal is to get rid of Trump. And if Bernie's going to be the nominee, then we're going to vote for him.
But there are rules in the convention, or used to be. I don't know. I haven't seen the current rules, that if you didn't achieve enough delegate vote, that it would go to another vote, and then all bets were off.
But nobody gets there with enough delegates. No. It's actually pretty rare in modern. I think John Kerry was the last person who got there with enough delegates. They almost always give it, or they always have given it, to the person who's winning.
Right.
Because it would be so undemocratic. You have this long, drawn-out, multi-year process, and you're just going to decide to change the vote at the last minute.
Nobody thinks that with Bloomberg's endless pot of money and Bernie's extensively organized ground game, that we see a potential for those two to collide in Milwaukee and have a broker convention?
They're going to collide in the New York primary, and I think it's going to be really
that's where it's going to happen.
Well, it's going to happen at some point, and New York is set up to be one of the states. I think it'll be really interesting. I mean,
so
what a contrast.
Finally, New York
what
will mean something in a primary.
Yeah, New York really may. May.
That's in April, right?
Right.
Yeah. How do we see that working for Bloomberg in a New York primary that's pivotal that he's in against Sanders?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Yeah.
With his history with stop and frisk in New York City, I don't see it going well for him.
You can certainly ask what a Bloomberg-Sanders contest means for the Democratic Party, and if the party really even exists at that point. I mean, you would have a candidate who's not a Democrat versus a guy who became a Democrat 2 years ago.
Yep.
You know, I mean,
that's fascinating, actually.
Yeah. And I want to point out that he did win for mayor 3 times. The last time, of course, there's some problem with, and that he bought that.
And also, blacks who are leaving Biden are going to Bloomberg.
Yeah.
There's been a market. Yeah,
and you know why? They
want to win.
You know, we'll see if that holds.
Yeah, right?
I mean, he's running a lot of ads that make it seem as though he's endorsed by President Obama, Barack Obama, and that obviously is not the case, you know. And
you know that how?
Have you seen the ads? I mean, there are Bloomberg ads where it's all Obama speaking, and there's no Bloomberg.
I've seen the ads, but I'll tell you one thing about Barack Obama. I think he desperately wants the Democrats to win. And if he desperately wants the Democrats to win, and if he thinks Bloomberg's the guy who's going to do it, he'll be with Bloomberg at the right time.
Well, we'll see how Bloomberg does. I mean, Bloomberg has had a very... I mean, first of all, he's got this massive monetary advantage, but he hasn't participated in any of the debates. He hasn't been out there, you know, meeting and greeting voters the way that the other candidates have. He hasn't been tested the way they have. And meanwhile, there's all these clips coming out from, you know, pretty horrible things that he has said.
Yeah, the Russians
throw
have
throw him up against the wall, you know, my black
kids. Stop and frisk stuff has been terrible.
Yeah, but, you know, you look at what Trump and you know, what they caught him on.
Yeah,
on,
but Trump isn't competing for
voters in a primary. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I'm not sure what moves voters anymore, because I would have thought that, you know, the fact that he was talking openly about sexually assaulting women would have been an automatic disqualifier for anybody running for president.
I agree with you.
I can't speak for black voters, but if I were a black father and I saw one of the candidates saying that my son should be thrown up against the wall in a clip from just 5 years ago, I would have a really tough time.
Well, you may be right. On the other hand, as I tried to point out a few seconds ago, he did win for mayor three times, and for some people in New York, not me, but for I live in Massachusetts, but for some people in New York, it was not something that turned them off.
JP brought it up yesterday, and I found this fascinating. That also remember that stop and frisk has given New York one of the lowest crime rates of any major city
that's
in the U.S.
True.
And that
that's just not true. Stop and frisk is not responsible for that. Crime didn't go up when they ditched the program.
That's true.
Ditch the effort, whatever
once
you want to
call it. Once you get low enough, I think Rosemary's
point. But Bloomberg has gotten the credit for lowering the crime rate in New York, and that is not unattractive to black voters.
So what do you do? That's right.
Yeah,
that's
He has to get away from stop and frisk. He's done an apology. I found it very lukewarm. He needs to go in there and graphically talk about what he did wrong and what he would do different and how he could avoid it. And I think he was actually smart. Makes me wonder if any Democrat would ever want to go into Bates again. When you see that Bloomberg has skipped all the things that have really hurt Elizabeth Warren, that tit for tat and the little tiny differences.
I agree with you.
Who's got the best Medicare for all? That was disastrous. For her.
But
for,
that's democracy. But having to answer for your positions and being questioned by other candidates and by moderators is part of democracy.
Okay, Chris.
You can't just float above it all and not answer questions about it.
Chris, if you want to have a discussion about how the best democracy, I'll be on your side. But I don't. I see this as a contest to get Trump out of office.
Can we have
that
discussion after the break?
No.
Okay.
We're just going to talk about that.
We're going to move on then. And we'll take more letters and we'll get to all of that right after this.
Early one morning, the sun was shining. I was laying in bed, wondering if she'd change it all, if her hair was still red. We both set our lives together, sure was gonna be rough. Never did like a mama's homemade dress, mama's bankbook wasn't big enough. Now I'm standing on the side of the road, rain on my shirt. Heading up to the East Coast, Lord knows I'm facing dues, getting through.
Just enjoying a little leftover salmon during the break. We welcome you to the program. Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Terry Gibson, and of course Alan Chartok, who has letters. We'll go to more of those, please, Alan.
Okay, boss. Reed says, panel. Good morning, panel. I've lived the majority of my life in the North Country, then the Southern Tier, now the city. This consternation about how a radical, in quotes, will appeal to swing voters is a red herring. Not a blue herring, but a red herring. Oh, I'm sorry. Bernard.
Not a leftover herring.
Not a cold one either. Yeah. Bernard Sanders authentically truly speaks to salt of the earth people. Apologies for the length. Reed, that was a very nice little letter. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah.
Three lines, we can take that.
Okay. And Rick in Otis and Beckett says, good morning, panel. Even though Bernie came out on top, he still didn't get 75% of the total vote. The race is still wide open. Does anybody in the room disagree with that? No. The race is wide open.
Absolutely
right.
Wide open.
With Amy moving up fast, and she can win. Bernie can't because Trump will paint him into a corner. And you think the country is ready to elect a gay president? Mayor Pete will probably lose the South big time. Rick in Otis.
Yeah, you know, His sexuality is a little bit of the elephant in the room. I mean, he did really well in Iowa, New Hampshire, and it's remarkable and wonderful that his sexuality wasn't discussed as part of the campaign. But I'll note that Iowa and New Hampshire are two states that passed gay marriage pretty early, you know, and now we're moving to states that maybe aren't quite so tolerant, and it'll be interesting to see if this continues.
Well, and Bernie can't because Trump will paint him into a corner. That caught my eye. I think. Is there a cat in the room?
I think that
every night Trump gets down on his knees and prays for Bernie. I do. I think he wants him to be.
I don't believe he prays.
I don't think Trump prays.
I understand your point, but there is that.
It was a little sarcastic.
Bernie, is the one who the label socialist fits the best, and that's what Trump wants to use. He's going to use that label on anybody that actually gets
nomination.
Well,
he's going to use commie.
They've
he's
already jumped to red commie.
But, you know, putting like a red commie socialist label on somebody like Amy Klobuchar is a little trickier. It's a little harder. It doesn't stick so well. It sticks pretty well on just about everybody else except for maybe Joe Biden. Including Trump, yeah. So he's going to paint anybody in the corner as best he's going to try to do that.
Back to the letters.
Good morning, panel. Even though Bernie – oh, we did that. Sorry.
No problem.
Annie says, good morning, panel. They all start the same way. Good morning, panel. About New, capital New, Hampshire. Mayor Pete and Amy Klobuchar together won more votes than Bernie. I believe there's a yearning for a more moderate candidate. If Amy or Pete dropped out of the race before the next round of primaries, do you think the one standing could beat Bernie? Okay, so the question is, does anybody in this room think that Amy or Pete is dropping out of the race?
Yeah.
No. Well, no, but to the point of the letter, it seems that the person who is the moderate waiting in the wings is Mike Bloomberg.
Yeah, I think we're looking at this wrong, but we always keep dividing this into moderate versus
great. 54 minutes into the show, and now you tell us we're saying it wrong. Go ahead.
No. Everybody keeps framing the debate that way, moderate versus. But I think it's actually blue collar versus white collar, or non-college educated versus college educated. Elizabeth Warren, Klobuchar, Buttigieg are all doing really, really well with wealthier voters, whiter voters with college degrees. Biden and Sanders, and I guess just Biden and Sanders, are doing better with blue-collar voters and voters of color. So, to say that like Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are always in the same lane, I just think is kind of a little bit of – is dubious. And I think one of the things people are missing about what's happening now is that New Hampshire was a good state for Sanders because he was from a neighboring state, but he's actually moving onto states now that are actually better for him. You know, Nevada is more diverse and more blue-collar and more working class. So are most of the Super Tuesday states.
The other thing about Bernie is Adlai Stevenson kept getting nominated for president because people loved the idea that this guy who was their standard bearer, who of course he was running against Ike, and forget that, but that they loved Adlai because he had a hole in his shoe, and they loved him, and you know all the rest of it, and they just kept going for him even though he wasn't going to win, and they should have known it.
Ronald Reagan, you know, was a wing nut too, and everyone said he was too far to the right, and he was too. It was unelectable.
Three times before.
Yeah, he ran over and over and over again, and then he came through in 1980 and won in a landslide, and he transformed the country and moved our politics way to the right. Right. Well, maybe Bernie's the left version of that, and he'll move the country back in the leftward
direction.
Although he would be considered too liberal for the Republican Party right now, which is really interesting. If you look at a lot of Reagan's policy, there's no way it would pass
today.
Through. This current group.
Right. And Bill Clinton would be too far to the right for the Democratic
Party. Yeah, absolutely.
And Janet says, Bernie, another Trump? What do you mean, Rosemary?
His personality is the same. He's a populist. He does not compromise, which is why his legislative record is so bad. You either do it his way or it doesn't get done at
Please.
All. Trump.
Please.
I agree with you, and I think both of them speak primarily to their base, leaving the middle scratch.
Well, Chris does not agree with you.
No, Chris
is a big Bernie supporter, and that's good because we don't have enough of that. But this is not, you know, just my opinion. The New York Times ruled against him as an endorsement for that same reason.
Yeah, but
look at the appeal he has. The people who skipped. When he did not win, voted for Trump rather than for the Democrat. Yes, he has. It's that populist thing.
I agree that there's a populist anti-establishment sentiment to both. And, you know, this is an anti-establishment. The country has that mood
Definitely.
Right now. But to say that, I mean, Bernie literally runs ads that say, fight for somebody who doesn't look like you. Right? Fight for people you don't know. That message is just 180 degrees opposite of what Trump's message is, which is basically fight for us against them, you know? So I just think the comparison is unfair.
Tarianism.
Pardon me?
Tarianism. Don't you remember when we were all kids and everybody said, what's the longest word in the English language? And it's anti-establishmentarianism. And Chris has just been talking about anti-establishment, anti-establishment. I wanted to yell out Tarianism.
Oh, I thought it was so you did. Fragilistic expialidocious. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. That's Maggie.
Did you get that, Ray? Yeah, okay.
And, you know, here's one other question about New Hampshire. Isn't that one of the states where you don't have to be a declared party member? You can come in, right? Or you declare
yes.
your party
member.
Right.
Independence.
So what about the independent spoilers in New Hampshire? Didn't that have something to do with helping Bernie? Because Republicans clearly seem to want him to be the candidate.
That's an interesting question.
I don't know
question.
That Republicans can vote in the Democrats.
Yeah, they can.
The Republicans
I believe
can?
So.
Or I thought
I
it was
thought
just independents.
Oh,
well, I know in my
right?
state the way that it works. In Massachusetts, if you are an unenrolled voter, you can vote. You can take a ballot in either in
right.
either party. I don't
but,
know.
But wouldn't you want
which
a
you
candidate
can't do here
who
in
does
New York.
Well with independents? I mean, I don't see why that would be a negative.
I don't think that's why they're voting for him. I think they're voting for him to give the weakest candidate to the Democrats.
Right. The polls show he does best among independents. I mean, that's
the polls.
I might.
I know.
I mean, that can change.
I know, Chris.
Saying,
I can't argue with this. I mean, you say he has a lovely ad. That doesn't mean, you know, where's the record of doing a great bill that changed lives for immigrants
Alan,
or negotiating?
Yeah.
He didn't do it.
Make There's your point, and then we have to go to a break.
Sorry. I'm just going to say, I may take on that line. I may take a Republican ballot this time to vote
yeah,
for Bill Wells.
You talked about
well, by
that.
The way, I got 10% of the vote last night. No, that's kind of an untalked about phenomenon. I mean,
Bill Wells got 10%.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought he dropped out.
No.
Yeah,
no, the other one
I
did.
Yeah.
I love
Bill another
Wells.
Candidate.
Welsh. And I got to tell you guys, there wouldn't be a WAMC without Bill Wells. End of statement.
I mean, that's weakness for Trump there that Wells got 10%.
We have to take a break. I just want to show this to you, Chris. See, I got your name with a heart emoji next to it. As it is one of,
you,
in
Mom.
The subject line. Yeah, so we'll read that letter later on.
Nice.
We welcome your letters, panel at
WAMC.org.
Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin, and we welcome you and your letters. We'll get to some more a little bit later on. We have the governor coming up at 10:30, but I do want to talk about the Roger Stone issue. All four career prosecutors handling the case against Roger Stone withdrew from the legal proceedings Tuesday, and one quit his job entirely.
Huh.
And you had a bad day. This after the Justice Department signaled it planned to undercut their sentencing recommendation for President Trump's longtime friend and confidant. The sudden and dramatic moves came after prosecutors and their superiors had argued for days over the appropriate penalty for Stone and exposed what some career Justice Department employees say is a continuing pattern of the historically independent law enforcement institution being bent to Trump's political will. That from the Washington Post.
So I have a theory. The theory is he's interfering, and that if they don't do what he wants, and if this judge, who I think is of great character, comes down and puts him in jail for a long time, a longer time, he'll pardon him. And even if he gets less of a sentence, he'll say, see, it wasn't that much, and he'll pardon him anyway, because I think he has to.
I thought he was going to pardon him and Flynn and Manafort all along. I think that's his plan.
Yep.
And that would be less harmful than what he's doing now, which he has directly interfered as president in a case. He has interfered in career prosecutors. And now this morning he's praising Barr for interfering in a case the attorney general
I'm sorry,
has
he said he was taking
no
charge.
Business, taking and charge.
Yes,
a mishandled, bungled case. That's something he shouldn't be involved in at all. It would have been better if he just pardoned the guy.
And you got to remember, Stone, I mean, what's Stone? He tampered with witnesses.
Yeah,
he threatened the judge. He violated the judge's multiple rulings. This guy is guilty. He has broken the law.
Judicial experts say 7 to 9 years.
Because it's a formula.
Yeah.
What the sentencing guideline is based on a formula for what he was convicted, and that's where the number came from. And the fact that Barr has gotten involved directly and the president does, further erodes, I mean, it's eroding my confidence in the justice system.
Sure.
You know, you just don't feel like you can get a fair shake. If you're a friend of Trump, there's a different set of rules and laws than it is if you're just one of the rest of us schlubs.
Or if you're Trump. I mean, Trump doesn't have to obey any laws, and he isn't.
Yeah.
I think it's important to point out that as soon as the President of the United States tweets out a comment about an ongoing court case, he is officially interfering in that case.
Yeah.
And when he then begins to
but
influence—
But who cares if you get away with it? Over and over
I think
and over
America
again.
Should be terrified
exactly,
of this.
Yeah.
I think
no,
every,
I, they
I think,
should be, but why aren't they? No,
well, I think that the complexities of how the justice system works, you know, is not something that everybody understands. But anybody in this country, regardless of party, that really cares about a fair justice system should be terrified by the President of the United States influencing the decisions of prosecutors. It is just one more step towards an authoritarian state, and it's terrifying.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right.
You're going after Vindman, and I mean, this whole ever since impeachment, I don't understand how a Republican senator who supported this man can look the voters in the eye and say that I've upheld my mm-hmm. my vow.
By the way, you just made that sound like it was 8 months ago. It was 6 days ago.
Because
I mean, that's just what's happened in 6 days.
Because these Republican senators are cold salmon.
Leftovers. Anybody else have anything else on Roger Stone? What do we think is going to happen? Well, you
well,
said.
That's interesting. I think the judge has to be careful. She's no fan of Roger Stone's, and she is allowed to go in and say, you're going to get 120 years for this. She can go way over the guidelines.
She won't.
Or way under. That would be an automatic excuse for
what will she do?
Pardon.
Predict.
I predict she'll go right in the middle, 8 years.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of the guidelines.
He doesn't need any excuse to pardon, though. I mean,
no,
I
think it's going to happen
gonna,
anyway.
He doesn't need an excuse. He's
but
gonna
this is,
what
you know
do.
What he's doing is the corruption is creeping out of the presidency into other agencies. Yeah. It's definitely in the Department of Justice. We've got the IRS under investigation for how they've looked at his and Pence's tax returns. That's interesting. Department of Defense is now right on the cusp, and they resisted him before with the war crimes guy. Remember him, Gallagher? But now Vindman, he wants Vindman punished by the military.
Yeah,
and they're driving all of the career leadership out, leaving just huge vacuums in the agencies. This is what I'm hearing from folks down in D.C., that the brain drain is just enormous. Understand, like, these attorneys that step back, they could make, in some cases, seven-digit salaries, millions of dollars, and they don't in order to work for the good of the country. So when these people say, I have had enough, I'm going to go to private practice and make money, we all lose.
That's true.
We all lose because the talent that they were providing at a ridiculous rate, if you look at what they're paid, we're never going to get that back.
And I don't know. I mean, other people could say that they should stand up, but by the same token, I mean, who blames them for walking away? I mean, my God. I mean, how do you just look at that situation and say, well, why wouldn't you?
You have to.
I mean, you're not going to win.
If you're working for an organization that no longer follows any set of rules or has any morals.
What you're doing in your profession.
You say that, Joe, but think of all of the Republicans, senators who don't do that, who don't walk away, don't have guts.
His base.
Well, right.
I was going to say, you know, Trump's base. You have to understand that they support this fully. Their whole talking point is that the government's always been corrupt, and we should have been holding these people accountable all along. And now finally, we have a president who's doing in the open. He's just showing how corrupt it's been, and he's going after these people that have been working behind the scenes all along against our interests. So they're totally embracing this. They love the fact that he's
doing it. I think sometimes government officials have to be more. Have to try harder not to play into that narrative a little bit. I mean, in the Roger Stone case, and I think Roger Stone is a terrible human being, and whatever happens to him happens to him.
Nixon on his back.
But the way that he was arrested,
he played
into Trump's narrative on that. I mean, the prosecutors overreached or the FBI overreached. I mean, they stormed his house. They had CNN cameras there. I think when you do things like that, you undermine your own credibility.
Rosemary put her.
Well,
hand,
they did not have CNN.
Well, somebody tipped CNN off.
CNN, they've written about this. Mm. They have reporters looking all over that case, and they read the signals. And as soon as Mueller's prosecutors moved, they moved in. They figured it out.
Rosemary's right. They wrote about this extensively in looking about it, but they had a reporter there for like 3 weeks.
Right.
Just
they knew
waiting.
It was coming.
Yeah.
I do want to read this. I'm sorry, Chris. I know this is rude. This is this one letter, Chris. It's about from Maggie, who says, "I'm loving Chris Churchill's analysis this morning. I think he is spot on."
This is what the Washington Post wrote after Stone's arrest. It said, "In Stone's arrest, the FBI's show of force was markedly unusual for an individual apprehended out of Mueller's office. To former special agents, prosecutors, and criminal defense attorneys, the chosen arrest tactics were confounding." You know, so why did they do it that way? They didn't need to. And that just, I'm not saying that any of that
spite.
Justifies what's happening now. I'm saying that they don't need to. They play into the narrative of corruption more than they.
I think
really
you're right,
need
and Stone does, doesn't he? Encourage that. He's so annoying and disobedient, and as he was to the judge, as he was to a federal judge. So I get it.
But look what we're doing here. Okay, we've taken the attention off what the root of the problem is.
Right.
It's Stone's illegal criminal activity, and instead we're talking about the FBI did this wrong or CNN did this, and we're not holding him and that whole campaign accountable for violating the law.
Maggie,
these guys camouflage all of their crimes so well and get us picking on things that aren't at the core of the problem.
But the FBI needs to behave professionally, and in this case, they didn't. You know, and I agree with you generally, but I do think that you're supposed to hold law enforcement up to a higher standard than guys like Roger Stone.
Yeah, but let's not forget also what's happening is we're being distracted from what the real unfairness in the justice system is. I mean, there is real unfairness in the justice system, and we're talking about a presidential nominee named Mike Bloomberg who has built a history around allowing law enforcement to arrest young black men for small petty crimes with small amounts of marijuana. Some of them are probably still in local jails and prisons now because they weren't able to afford bail and get out.
Yeah, the mass incarceration.
There is a real injustice in our justice system, and to have all of a sudden a president who's focusing on Roger Stone as being the poster boy for unfairness,
That's a good point.
Is just completely wrong.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo will be joining Alan Chartok in just about 15 minutes on the roundtable. We are going to go, and we have a large pile of letters, so we'll get through as many as we can in our remaining time.
Stuart writes a very interesting letter. Alan, wasn't it anti-disestablishmentarianism? Don't leave out the dis.
All right.
Point made.
Dis.
Laura says, reminder to New Yorkers, please remind your New York listeners that Friday is the last day to change update their political parties to be able to vote in New York's closed primaries. Thank you. And that's best from Laura in Pleasant Valley, where everyone smiles.
Yeah, that's a really good point. If you want to vote in this primary, you better get moving.
Get going.
Yeah,
it's a stinky system here in New York. We have a better one in Massachusetts. Peter, regarding voter turnout in New Hampshire. Dear Roundtable, turnout last night was actually quite good, near 2008 figures. The estimates based on exit polls turned out to be inaccurate. Peter in Toronto.
Yeah, we were talking during the break, too, that there was a law change in New Hampshire. The GOP passed a rule that made it significantly more difficult for college students to vote there. So that may have impacted turnout as well.
And New Hampshire has a lot of college towns. And we're normally what we saw 4 years ago with Bernie Sanders doing very well in those areas. He still did well in those areas, but not nearly the numbers that he was bringing.
Yeah, he had a massive rally at UNH the night before the vote, Monday night. And you wonder how many of those kids actually were able to vote.
Can you remind me, guys, what the politics of New Hampshire are compared to Vermont? We know Vermont is Democratic. New Hampshire is?
I think it's more purple. I mean, it's cantankerous, I think, would be the best way to put it.
Yeah. That's a great description. Yeah,
I mean,
a great description of it.
Hillary won, but barely, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And
against Trump. But lost to Bernie.
Yes.
And Tyler says, discussion. Bernie Sanders has unquestionably had the most consistent political record. He cares about climate change and student loans, the two biggest crises facing young people in this country. It's time to take down corporations controlling American politics. Bernie or bust, says Tyler.
But you see, people are going to hear that, and in their mind, they're going to say, oh, my God, he's going to close my corporation. I'm going to lose my job. And that's the very language that's going to scare people in the middle of the road against the Sanders campaign.
And all the 401k people.
You got it.
Yeah. Teresa says, Bloomberg, do you really think black voters will vote for him after the contempt he showed and throw them up against the wall comment? Would you, if he had said that about somebody in your ethnicity?
Well, that's a really good question. One of the things that happened yesterday when that tape was released, that a lot of pretty prominent black politicians, you know, demanded, spoke out against it and talked about how horrible it was.
And we heard from George, who said Elizabeth Warren, another factor in Elizabeth Warren's slip in the ratings, she's hated and feared by Wall Street and the big corporations even more than Bernie. By coincidence, question mark, she's gotten far less press coverage in the mainstream media than other candidates or than her ratings would warrant.
Far less coverage. That always makes me worried. Unless you've done an extensive content analysis, I'd like to see it. Other than Trump, who got lots. Yeah, I don't think it's true. Yeah. I didn't think it was true when they said Bernie didn't get coverage.
But, you know, just real quick, but because I was thinking of this before when we were talking about it, but just, what is it, 2 weeks ago? She got the endorsement from the New York Times.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah,
I
mean, exactly.
There was a period there where she was getting really glowing coverage.
Yeah,
and,
that was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Right.
I think the letter writer is correct, though, Alan, in one respect, that I think Warren has done more practical work in the Senate when you start to think about consumer protections than Sanders has. I mean, she actually I do think Wall Street probably fears her more than they fear Sanders.
That's a good point.
Yeah, does that mean he should or should not pick her as his running mate?
I don't think you can have a Vermont, Massachusetts ticket.
You can have a Vermont, Oklahoma ticket. I mean, that is where she's from.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Me neither. I'm not going there. But when you talk about the press and where they've laid off, I think Mayor Pete is probably a good example of not having of the press. It's almost as if he weren't there, and yet in both of these states, he did as well or better than Sanders did.
Well, I think Buttigieg has gotten lots of press coverage because he's such an oddity, an inexperienced person from the middle of the country. He shows up. His own personal history is extremely interesting. I think he's gotten lots of coverage. And what you're seeing in the last few times is the oddities of the race. Iowa's a disaster. That's what the press should and is focusing on. And New Hampshire just happened, so we haven't seen the coverage from
that sticking
yet.
With my story.
You know, what? Can I say one more thing about
he's
the press?
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, he won. He's still popular vote or whatever. I mean, he's still, however you re-canvass that, he still did really well. I mean, to the point, he still did really well.
But I think he got just a ton of positive press coverage coming out of Iowa, though. I don't think he was.
No, and I think he probably would have done a lot better had Amy Klobuchar not soared in the last couple of days.
I look at him, he's kind of opie-ish,
Taylor.
I mean, you look at him, and it's sort of like, you know, your kid brother's trying to do something good. You know, you go, kid. You get it. But I don't think he's been under the – I do agree. I don't think he's had the scrutiny that others will. He will.
Who?
He will.
What are we talking about?
About Buttigieg.
Buttigieg, yeah.
Well, and but, I mean, I think that scrutiny has come just in the last – certainly from the other campaigns, from Biden's campaign, from Sanders' campaign.
I actually think he's gotten less interesting as he's come under scrutiny. He's being more and more careful now. He's centrist. He's moving to the center. He's not as vibrant a candidate as he was at the beginning.
He did get attacked in the last few days, and I think that's part of the reason Amy Klobuchar moved up a little bit.
Right.
Although it seems also from some of the exit polls like maybe she took more from Elizabeth Warren than anybody else.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
But
we heard from Alexandru, who said, I am surprised that the discussion of Trump's health is not in the news. Trump's health. He is obese, incoherent at times, and confused.
His doctor says he's, what, 175 pounds? What did he say?
1 pound under the obese limit.
Well, before we attack that, as somebody in a similar demographic,
I'm right where I'm right there with you, Bob.
I'm sorry, that letter hit really close to home.
But I'm sure both of our doctors have the right weight on our terms.
If
Twitter is,
if he is reelected, it is unlikely he will last for another 4 years.
Oh, you don't know that.
No. So what will happen then? No one close to him cares about his health, and their fear of Trump prevents them from speaking out. I think Trump is a non-factor, and whether he is reelected or not, he won't last. That's
but
what
Trump
I
is a non-factor? Wow, that's amazing. Wow. I think that I'm in favor of detailed medical reports on the president, which we don't have, and also on some of the candidates. Bernie's health, still, I think about it all the time. He is a man in his 70s who had a heart attack very recently, and he's now competing in an extremely tense-filled contest for the worst job in the world. This is really Why are we not getting reports on his health?
He doesn't think it's.
Well, we also have a history in this country of having presidents who have had health issues, and they've been able to cover them up. Ike and many others. And,
Kennedy.
I mean,
Reagan, second term.
For all we know right now, Jared Kushner is actually running the entire country. I mean, it could very well be happening.
And that wasn't all we covered up about Kennedy. So
that's the most terrifying thing we've said today. Thank you, Terry.
What? Terry says, Pete Buttigieg, hi, panel. I'm happy to see Mayor Pete doing well. He's younger than Bernie, and I think that matters. I hope people vote for the Democratic nominee no matter who it is because, as I've said before, we are not just voting for the president but also voting for who the president will pick as staff members. And I think we can all agree that the Democratic nominees will surround themselves with better people than Trump has. Have a good day. Well, all agree? Maybe 45% of the American people don't agree with that. You know what I mean? Not that I don't agree with it.
Chuck.
49 in the latest CNN poll. Oh. I'm sorry, the latest Gallup
Louise
poll.
Says, Hampshire primary. Good morning, panel. If you add Amy and Pete's percentage and Bernie and Elizabeth Warren's percentage, you can see the Democrats are moving toward a more middle road moderate candidate. If Bernie is president, we can look forward to at least four more years of deadlock. That's Louise in Clifton Park.
I was just laughing because Rosemary just said about his numbers of 49% in the Gallup poll. There was a Post headline which I found in the analysis, and the headline is Trump is polling well enough that the numbers he apparently invents are almost accurate.
Susan says, Corbyn and Sanders, hi panel. Even Trump people I talk to admire Bernie. Unlike the British who supported Labour but not Jeremy Corbyn, like the McGovern loss in 1972, not all these comparisons hold water. Wasn't called the moral majority yet, but in 1972, many voted for Nixon due to a backlash against change, not because McGovern was so bad. Times change. I'm rooting for Bernie, the best candidate I never thought I'd see. And that's from Susan in Pine Plains.
I've had that experience with Trump voters, too, where they talk really, really. I mean, relatives of mine who love Trump also really like Bernie. Yeah.
And that doesn't scare you.
But will they vote for him?
I don't know. I mean, they at least, you know, they like him. I mean, if you listen to them talk on economics, they agree with him a lot more than you might think, too. I mean, Trump didn't run as he's governed. He ran as somebody who was kind of well to the left of his party on economics. Mm-hmm.
I just want to mention this before in our last couple of seconds, just because I know we'll get letters on it. But there was the Quinnipiac approval poll that came out over the weekend that had the president's approval rating at 43%. There was the Monmouth poll that had this as of the 9th that had the president's approval rating at 44%. And the Gallup poll and the Rasmussen poll are the ones that are being quoted.
And
as
both
49%.
Have been seen as Republican, the best Republican
but,
poll you can buy.
You know, there's
the only president in American history who celebrates polls that show him underwater with.
But if you look at, but to the point being that 43-44%, even if you say it's increasing, but it's 43-44%, it's the same 43-44% we've been talking about.
It was 39% before.
Before the
impeachment began,
yep.
So it was under 39. It was hovering around 40 for a long time, for years.
And very quickly, we get to the next letter, which is from Michael. Did someone die? You all sound a little defeated this morning. Funny, you say you were saying all the great things about Biden a few weeks ago. Say that Bernie Sanders is a radical and how out of touch he is with the voters. Fishing for bad things to say about him and then promoting the idea that a former Republican is buying his way into the only hope for the Democratic Party. Do you listen to yourselves? And that's from Michael and Newberg. Michael, you're making the same mistake we hear a great deal where somebody writes to the panel and says, you're all saying this or that. We have a panel which is very diverse. And I'm telling you, Chris Churchill has been very clear about Bernie Sanders this morning.
And Mike Bloomberg.
Yeah, right.
But also, I don't think we're down today. I think we were a little skip in our step.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, we're a little anti-disestablishmentarianistic. Good morning, panel. You all sound a little defeated. Oh, yeah, we did that one.
two
with the same thing.
Wow, maybe.
Don't cheat.
Good
all right, last letter.
Good morning, panel. Thank you for always for your insightful discussion.
Mind. Not the last letter. Keep going.
Oh. Two quick thoughts. I was impressed by Elizabeth Warren's speech early in the evening where she pointed out the need for all candidates to put aside their egos sooner than later in order to unify the party and bring success November 1st. I am hopeful, although not optimistic, that will happen once a clear frontrunner has been identified. The best way to accomplish that would be if Bernie is, in fact, the candidate, to choose a moderate to run alongside of him. In other words, Klobuchar or Buttigieg, fuse the two factions of the party and show true willingness to listen to everybody. Pamela in Carmel, New York. And then we heard from Brinton, who said, "Stop it, Rosemary. Why is Rosemary so depressive? Hillary was not the most qualified candidate ever. She was actually probably the most defeatable serious candidate could be. Unfair as it was, the Repubs had more ammunition against her than against anyone else, and she still, almost won. There is a double standard, but let's have some faith." Brinton in Maine.
I would like to. I don't.
Okay. According to our caller ID, we have a call from Anonymous. I'm pretty sure that's the governor of New York State. So we'll say goodbye to the panel this morning. My thanks to Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Terry Gibson. Thank you all very, very much. We will return with the governor of New York State and Dr. Alan Chartok right
You're
after
all
this.
Great.